Welcome to Let's Talk Loyalty, an industry podcast for loyalty marketing professionals. I'm your host, Paula Thomas, and if you work in loyalty marketing, join me every week to learn the latest ideas from loyalty specialists around the world. Hello, and welcome to episode 294 of Let's Talk Loyalty. Today, we're chatting with our friends in Comarc, specifically Jarek Vladika, who is currently Comarc's Managing Director for Australia and New Zealand. Jarek has a fascinating career creating huge loyalty programs, particularly for enterprise clients in Southeast Asia. In today's discussion, he shares with us some of the incredible similarities and differences in how loyalty programs are run by utility brands, airlines, and coalition programs in Western countries and mature loyalty markets, compared with some of those that he set up in Asian countries like Malaysia, Thailand, and the Philippines. It's a fascinating comparison and contrast, showcasing what works for loyalty programs in different cultures and for different industries. I hope you enjoy hearing Jarek's insights and perspective on how loyalty programs are helping brands to connect with their members in such different ways across these fascinating countries. So, Jarek, first and foremost, welcome to Let's Talk Loyalty.
Hey, Paula, it's really a pleasure to be on your podcast. I've been a fan for a while, looking forward to it.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you for being a fan. It always makes my day when somebody says that. So glad to be useful, I guess, and interesting because we have such a small niche industry. So I think we have a lot to learn from each other. And today we're here to learn a lot from you. So to start the conversation, Jarek, as you know, we always begin by asking about our favorite loyalty programs. So please do tell me, what is your favorite loyalty program?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I did expect it as I listened to your show quite a lot, and I was thinking about what the answer should be. I have to be a little bit careful how I answer this question because there's a lot of people who might be my potential clients. I don't want anybody to feel offended. But I think when I thought about the question, I thought about it from a perspective of the sophistication of programs, the complexity, and the value that they bring to their members. And I would like to say that my favorite category of programs are the frequent flyer programs. The hold that they have on customers, and you know, them wanting to constantly go up the tiers, you know, just amazes me. I'm a traveler myself.
Yeah.
I travel, well, not daily, but at least, you know, weekly or bi-weekly.
Yeah.
And for me, having that status with an airline is just something I can't live without. So I'm really impressed how these frequent flyer programs, you know, how they position themselves and how clients see them, how indispensable they are to some people.
Yeah.
I'm really amazed by the category itself. And of course, there's a few, you know, in the business there, and they're all sort of similar. Some are better than the others, but they are usually one of the biggest assets that airlines have. So
yeah.
I'm really impressed by those kind of programs.
Absolutely. And I know Comarc has a lot of wonderful airline clients, so I'm sure we'll be getting into talking a little bit about all of that. And you've reminded me, Jarek, even back to my own days, I suppose, early in my career, long before I really got into loyalty, I did work with Emirates, as you might know, and I loved that. I was working on the e-commerce side. But I remember getting my first credit card that was giving Skywards miles. And I remember using the word that I feel like a points junkie. And I know that's actually a very unpleasant word, of course, because of its association. But that's actually how I felt. Like, I honestly would never use any other form of payment. So you're absolutely right. And the airline industry has the combined benefit of, you know, relatively high spend for most of us in terms of our everyday life, the aspirational side of travel, again, particularly leisure travel, I would say. You sound like you've got more business travel. And of course, the airlines, I suppose, really invented the industry. I know there was stamp card programs before it as well, but I think the airlines have nailed it. And I know we talked before as well that the valuations on airline loyalty programs is sometimes more than the airline itself. So incredible stuff, huh?
I mean, that's mind blowing. I've been in the industry for about 7-8 years. And it just doesn't stop to amaze me that some of these programs are more valuable than the airline itself. I think if somebody's outside of the industry, they just wouldn't believe if they heard it. So you have to look it up, do some research and see if it's really true. You know, it's one of those things you really doubt when you hear about them, but
totally.
It is true. Yeah.
It is absolutely true. So 7 or 8 years you said in loyalty then, Yarick. So tell us a bit about your career, I guess, maybe before, but certainly since. Mm-hmm. And how did you get into the loyalty industry?
Sure. I mean, of course, the most interesting bit is the loyalty bit. But I think generally what I can say about myself is that I've been in the solution delivery side, on the vendor side for all of my career. I started with IBM. I worked with them in 3 different countries. We were delivering technologies to their big clients. I've done that for a while. So I was on the delivery side. And I'm still, even in Comarch, even though delivery is not my responsibility, I still kind of feel responsible for the delivery piece of, you know, of every project. And I always am very closely involved. So with IBM, I sort of left IBM when I was based in Kuala Lumpur, and that's when Comarch approached me. They wanted to expand into the region. You know, Comarch is actually a global company these days, but when I joined, which is sort of 7 years ago, they were still growing in Asia, and they've only expanded to ANZ just 3-4 years ago. So, but we feel like we've kind of completed that expansion now, and we're just growing in those regions where we already are. So my job with Comarch from the beginning was expansion of our business in a specific region for a few years. I was based in Kuala Lumpur. I was looking after Southeast Asia, and we've managed to win a few really interesting deals there with clients, mainly in telco, but also airline and retail. Mm-hmm. And then about 3 years ago, you know, just before COVID, that's another interesting story, I moved to Australia. And since then, I'm really focusing on Australia and New Zealand markets, on growing our presence here.
Wonderful. Yeah. I mean, super exciting. Australia, New Zealand, I've still never been to. So, you know, I definitely have to come. But as a loyalty market, I suppose it's one that I really pay an awful lot of attention to. I feel it's one of the most mature markets in the world. So I'm full of admiration for particularly what happens where you are now. So I know you're the managing director, certainly for the Australia business. I guess that covers New Zealand as well. Am I right? Yeah,
it does. Yes, correct.
Yeah. So what was it like getting started in Kuala Lumpur and setting up the Malaysia office? I'm fascinated because actually even also Southeast Asia, I haven't done certainly any loyalty work in at all. So tell us a bit about your role and the work you did in Malaysia.
Yeah, so you know, as we all know, for a number of years, Asia has really been the growth engine, you know, of the world. A lot of things are really happening there these days, and in some ways, Asia has even taken a lead in certain aspects of, you know, digital customer experience, and you know. Yeah. Aspects like that. So for me, there were a couple of reasons why being in that region was exciting. So one, of course, is the reason I just mentioned, which is the growth and just the size and the number of opportunities in that region. But also from another perspective, you know, the cultural perspective is just such a variety there of cultures and religions and, you know, ways to approach things that I mean, to me, that was always... Yeah. Something that excited me whenever I was jumping on a plane, you know, somewhere, it was always somewhere different. And I always had to kind of switch something in my head to remind myself where I'm going and what kind of culture I'll be dealing with. But it was one of those positive things. I was never worried about it. It's something that was, you know, driving me. So I really loved that. And just the number of clients there and what they're trying to do for their own, let's say, clients, creates an enormous number of opportunities. So that was really really exciting.
Yeah. And I think you're right, Jarek. I think we, you know, we all know Asia as a place of, you know, digital first, digital transformation, and I guess scale. You know, China is still the most populous country in the world, as far as I know, although I think India is about to take over.
Yes,
Malaysia,
I think so, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Super interesting. Malaysia, I know nothing about, but what I did learn from you last time we spoke, Jarek, was the sheer scale of the loyalty or membership, let's say, of the particular projects that you are working on. So, and you told me a little bit about why as well. So we'll definitely be getting into the approach to becoming, you know, part of these programs with these big customer bases. So give us a sense of what we're talking about, Jarek. What kind of clients were you working on, and what kind of membership did these guys have?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, you know, with the, I guess the interesting thing about Comarch and the loyalty clients that we have is that they're from all over the place. So we have, you know, we're starting with airline clients, you know, going through telco, retail, you know, oil and gas clients, and also other industry. So my job was really, you know, talking to clients from all of these industries. So the variety of, you know, the types of clients and the challenges they are facing was just really, really high for us. Mm. We're not just specializing in one, but if I had to select the ones that we were mostly, let's say, engaged with, I would say it's definitely telco and airlines. And, you know, because the population in the Southeast Asian countries is, you know, maybe with a few exceptions like Singapore, which is not that big, is really just very, very high. So, you know, everybody knows how big China is, but, you know, not many people know that Indonesia is, you know, over 300 million people. So,
wow.
So that is something to be mindful of. And, you know, when you work with clients in that part of the world, you have to be able to, you know, as a vendor, you have to be able to support these really large volumes. So Indonesia is one, but, you know, Philippines, I think they're nearly 100 or over 100 million now. Thailand, I think about 60, 70 million.
Wow.
And Vietnam, I think also nearly 100. I may not be 100% correct. On all these figures, but you know, we're talking about nearly 100 million or over, like in case of Indonesia. So that was the exciting bit, because not only the clients are very digitally savvy there and they expect a lot from the program, that they will not be happy with just, you know, one or two things that they can do with the program. They really expect the loyalty program to be, you know, a kind of a one place to go to for almost all their, you know, kind of daily needs.
Yeah.
So they want to be able to order food. They want to be able to, you know, ride a taxi. So that's Grab, which is the kind of popular ride sharing app in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So all these programs, they have to cover all, you know, all these bases, and not only have the variety of rewards or partners, but also be able to handle the volumes, because, you know, with such a high number of members, you get volumes that are really, really challenging, and you know, the technology has to be there, you know, to support it. If clients are not able to redeem or they're not able to earn, that's when, you know, your clients or the members get really bad experience, and you know, it's never good. So you know, one of the key aspects for us in Southeast Asia was always the performance and the ability to integrate and to just make all these various offers work seamlessly.
Absolutely. So incredible populations, as we said, and I think you said to me last time as well, Jarek, that in many cases, and I think it was in a telco context, and I do want to explore telco a little bit with you, because I know you've done some extraordinary stuff. the default approach seems to be that they're automatically enrolled into the loyalty programs for these particular, I'd say, certainly utilities. Because as you said, it's one thing to have like a super app, and Grab is you know, just an astronomical business, of course, when you combine those kind of everyday things into one big super app for the whole country. But I think what you have also done extremely well is build for telcos or build coalition programs. So I wanted to kind of, I suppose, get into, first of all, that approach about auto-enrolling. How did that go down, both from a privacy perspective and, I guess, from an engagement perspective? Because, you know, I think part of our psychology, and I say our being, let's say, the European mindset that I come from, we would tend to expect that the customer should make the decision to join in order to really feel that they want to get a value out of it. And it's something they want to give their attention to. So tell us a bit about the experience in East Asia.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're referring to. I know privacy is really an area of an increasing concern, and customers are more and more, you know, cautious about the consents that they're giving out, and that especially I think applies to, let's say, Western economies or the advanced ones.
Yeah.
I would however say that probably in Southeast Asia, my observation was that it's not a concern yet. I mean, clients are very happy to be, you know, offered all these opportunities to earn points or redeem points for various aspects that it doesn't seem like they mind being enrolled automatically to programs. And in with our telco clients, that's I think in 100% of cases that's how it is, that the clients of a telco would be automatically a part of the program. I guess the challenge is there for the telcos. It's not just whether the client is a member, but whether the client actively engages with the program, and that's where I think telcos put a lot of focus on to make sure that their programs not only are big, but that the large percentage of those members are actually actively engaged. And of course, when you enroll everybody, you're not going to get 100% engagement rate, you are getting into high figures, and that engagement, I think, is generally higher than probably in similar programs, let's say in the West. So I think these telcos still do a better job. Privacy doesn't seem to be a big concern at this stage.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're a client of a telco, you are giving your details to the telco anyway. So it just seems like loyalty over there is just an additional feature of being a client, you know, with a telco.
Yeah,
and it's not something that the telcos seem to be expecting a separate enrollment to. So it could be with other businesses, like with retail or airline programs in Southeast Asia. You still enroll, but it seems like telcos kind of different in that aspect.
Yeah,
but you know, in other cases, you still enroll.
Yeah. You know, and it's something that I often wondered about, let's say. I won't say I ever took that agenda, you know, in any project that I worked on, but I worked in telco loyalties in the very beginning. That's how I got in. I was with Telefonica, for example. And both on the legal perspective and on the ethical and moral front, to me, I would prefer to auto-enroll. Because I do have this belief that it is a benefit to the user. And as long as the, you know, first of all, the awareness is there that, you know, any marketing perhaps might need to be opted into separately. So communications might be a different decision. But I always felt that we were giving our members a lot of work to do to, first of all, discover our program, join our program, you know, read all the terms and conditions, tick all the right boxes, definitely say they're not a robot or whatever, download an app. Like I genuinely feel that there should be an opportunity to do it, as I said, both legally and ethically, because we all know there's no point, obviously, ever upsetting a member. At the end of the day, that would backfire very quickly. So I'm not saying we take risks with the data, but I do like the approach that they seem to be taking. And as you said, with scale. So give us a sense of some of the numbers of members that you had with some of those programs that you set up.
Sure. Probably an example that just comes to my mind the quickest is a client I still actively work with, and that's Globe in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. They're number one telco in that country in terms of their subscriber base, and it's around 90 million.
Wow.
Of subscribers to the telco, and therefore automatically members to the program.
And that was
something that we had to take very seriously when we were deploying the platform. I don't want to say this is something that comes easy, but we can definitely, knowing the challenge, we can definitely prepare for it and make sure we handle it. And you know, the cooperation with the client has really, really been, you know, outstanding. The platform has been extremely stable, and there were no concerns on the performance. So we've been, you know, at peak times when, you know, maybe I'll add one more story here. The client Globe, they are organizing this annual sort of anniversary event, which is the birthday of the telco. It's called 917.
Okay.
And 917 is also the kind of prefix that this telco uses.
Okay.
And they do the birthday on the 17th of September. So that's the 917 reference. And actually, the whole of September is like a big festival that the telco and the Globe Rewards program takes very seriously. And they just double down on offering clients extremely, you know, good deals, extra points, discounted redemptions. They organize concerts, and that's a time of the year where the engagement from the members with the program is just the highest, you know, in the year. So we were told by the client to expect really high volumes, and we had to prepare for transaction peaks of up to 4,000 transactions per second. So you can just imagine when I share these numbers with clients in Australia, they just can't believe that is actually possible. But that's what I said earlier in the beginning of our conversation. That's just the scale. When you're active in Asia, you have to be able to handle, you know, those scales and to enable those great experiences that telcos or, you know, other clients want to offer to their members. And, you know, we're really proud to be working with Globe on their anniversary. I think it's been already the second one that we've just completed with them, and of course everything went well. Our client is happy, their clients are happy. So this is the kind of scale that, you know, that we have to deal with in Asia. And that's one of the things that excites me, because as you can tell from my answers, I'm really a technology guy, and just love when technology enables, you know, these things. That's what drives me and, you know, makes me want to get out of bed and, you know, find another customer who has a similar challenge and whom we can help.
Amazing. Amazing. And that 4,000 transactions a second, Jarek, that's nothing got to do with the telco and the phone calls and the telecommunications.
No, it's the redemptions, the accruals, all the types of transactions that can, you know, hit our system.
Stuff.
At a specific moment in time. Of course, it's not for the whole day. But there will be, you know, times in the day where 4,000 out of those 90 million, you know, decides to click a button on their app, and that's where this comes from. So it's nothing to do with the like telephone calls or SMSs. It's the activity with the program can reach, you know, these sort of levels.
Wow.
It's quite amazing.
Okay. So we officially need to get Globe as a, you know, guest on Let's Talk Loyalty. I think that's super important.
I'm working on that.
Okay. Fabulous. Again, I know very little about the Philippines, but tell us about a couple of the other programs then that you started in Asia.
Mm-hmm. So Globe will probably be the example of the highest number of members, but we've also worked with a few other telcos in the region. I just want to maybe say something about why telcos, because that's actually not a not a typical kind of client globally, but I think in Asia, telcos really seem to be kind of doing the role of what, let's say, big coalition, like grocery kind of programs do in Australia or New Zealand.
Okay.
In Australia and New Zealand, you don't see telcos playing a big part in those in creating these let's say ecosystems of loyalty where you can you know, earn and you know and redeem points with various partners, which is what actually airlines do do a lot more in Australia.
Yeah.
In Asia, it's not so much the airlines that do it. Of course, they do it, but they're not. That I think it's actually the telcos who tend to be those, you know, number one players in terms of how big these, you know, coalitions and those loyalty offerings are. So,
yeah.
So we've been fortunate to cooperate with a number of clients in the telco space. And you know, the other examples would be True Corporation in Thailand, and that's actually True are a part of a larger conglomerate. And within that group, they, you know, they have other businesses, you know, like 7-Eleven, you know, grocery, you know, shopping malls. They've got also like online entertainment systems. So there's a lot of various types of businesses that are part of, you know, part of the group. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the program that the telco runs, of course, automatically covers those other businesses. So for a telco that's part of a larger, you know, group or a larger conglomerate, they really become the vehicle for that group to, you know, to cross sell, upsell, to make sure that the client kind of stays within their ecosystem. So True is one of those examples. And I was also responsible for you know, landing that deal with True. I was actually there when it was implemented, and I was involved. And I just remember, you know, a lot of meetings, or we were trying to work out how do we do this, because the complexity of those, you know, various business rules that you have to set up with the number of partners, with the way that recognition works, you know, various criteria that we have to take into account, they're not your everyday, you know, kind of standard rules of a program. In Asia, generally, I would say that the programs tend to be quite complex from that perspective. There's just a lot of rules on how you can earn status, earn points.
Yeah.
And that puts a lot of pressure on the technology to be able to deliver, you know, to all those expectations that the telcos or other, you know, big clients have. So that's probably, you know, another thing that's worth saying about how loyalty looks like in that part of the world.
Yeah.
And the other client that I may mention is XL Axiata in Indonesia, and they've sort of maybe not gone as much in this direction of having, you know, hundreds of partners.
Yeah.
They've really tried to keep their program, you know, more simple, more streamlined. Mm-hmm. But I think what's interesting about them is that they not only target the end users of their services, but they also offer a kind of a B2B program for their distributors. So that's another way that, you know, we help clients use our technologies. You know, you don't have to limit yourself to just offering a program to the clients, but you can also involve your business partners, your distributors, you know, perhaps even, you know, vendors that provide services to you. So that's an interesting example there. And, you know, these distributors, they actually earn points for every, let's say, SIM card or every top up that they are able to sell, and that motivates those distributors to prefer XL Axiata services on rather than, you know, the other telco. So it's an interesting way to use loyalty technology to drive business outcomes. So
totally.
Yeah. So that's the other telco example.
Super. So True from Thailand, and then the one from Indonesia you just mentioned there is XL Axiata.
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
So great reference stories, ones we can go, and again, always welcome to have them on the show. The other piece, I guess, just, you know, we've talked about scale, Yarick, I suppose, is probably one of the biggest differences. We've talked about the enrollment or lack of as another mm-hmm. big difference between, you know, loyalty programs in Southeast Asia versus, you know, the rest of the world. And by that, I mean the Western world. So US and UK are actually our top two audiences. Are there any other kind of big differences that you would see in terms of the consumer proposition? I feel like, mm-hmm. I suppose you've talked a lot there about the scale of partnerships, you know, and that they're almost positioning themselves, certainly as utilities, as coalition programs. Is there any other kind of customer propositions that you would see in Southeast Asia that would be, do you think, interesting for the audience?
I think I can maybe flip this the other way around, because as long as in Asia you've got this kind of richness and scale and the variety of programs, I think what maybe one of the differences is in favor of the developed markets is, I think, the sophistication of personalization. So I would say, okay, in Asia it's probably not as personalized. Maybe it's partly due to it's difficult to personalize when you have such a rich, you know, offering, yeah, and it's hard to really decide what do I really personalize, you know,
yeah,
to or with. So I think, you know, the programs that I've experienced in ANZ region are definitely more sophisticated there. So you would see offers that really feel like they're sort of based on your transactions. Mm. For example, so with, you know, one of the programs I use quite a lot in Australia are all those kind of retail programs with either, you know, companies like Flybuys or Everyday Rewards.
Sure.
And they really seem to be knowing, you know, what I buy, and they're targeting with offers of products that I actually want to buy. Mm-hmm. And I frequently take advantage of those offers, or somehow magically they know, you know, what my spend is, and they always try to, you know, motivate, yeah, me to spend this amount for, you know, maybe 4 consecutive weeks to, yeah, get some bonus points. So I really feel like that part,
okay,
of the puzzle is done really well in ANZ. I think they,
yeah,
there's certainly, you know, that there's an aspect that in Southeast Asia could be improved, and I'm sure it will be improved. It's just maybe, you know, with the scale, maybe it's not as easy.
Totally.
So yeah, so that's I think something that I would I would say is another differentiator, maybe
nice,
in favor of ANZ this time.
Okay. Yeah. And do you get the question? I used to get this a lot when I was consulting, Yarick, and actually it was my least favorite question because I never felt it was my responsibility. But, you know, sometimes I'd be brought in to convince a brand that they needed a loyalty program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be being driven, let's say, by somebody at a mid-senior level, but the board or the, you know, the actual leadership team would be like going, so why do we need a loyalty program? And it's one thing to have the internal perspective and somebody maybe who really understands the potential of what a loyalty program can do, but they always seem to want to wheel in somebody from the outside. So I'm just wondering if you get that kind of question, or is Australia, New Zealand, you know, so mature that actually that question's already something that people kind of get and understand?
Yes. So it's probably the latter. As you said earlier, Australia and New Zealand are really mature loyalty markets. You know, there's a loyalty program, you know, left and right.
Yeah.
I think they all understand the value, and also the clients that I usually talk to are those kinds of clients that, where, okay, loyalty is, you know, like one of the basic things that, okay, you know, that the business has to have. But I think I think this should be really a no-brainer. That there may be some exceptions to this, but I think for most businesses, having a loyalty program is really, really, you know, just like having a really personal and direct channel to talk to your clients. I think if you don't have a program and there isn't this kind of agreement or consent, you know, that, okay, from a client that, yes, you can talk to me, I really like you, I want to be a part of your program so that I you know more about your offers, and I get maybe some special offers because I really like, you know, your brand, and I want to engage. I mean, that's just, to me, it's such an enormous expression of trust from the client that they want to be a part of a program. So I would say there is nothing comparable, because if you don't have a program and it's, you know, a client is just I mean, it's someone you don't know. You can't put a name to a client. You know, someone's, you know, coming and buying. Maybe, you know, he's using the, you know, the same credit card.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell it's the same person. But, you know, loyalty is where you really, you know, put a name to your client. You start learning more about him or her, what the preferences are. Mm-hmm. And you just get this amazing direct channel that you can use to communicate. So to me, loyalty is the best channel that most businesses can wish for to talk to their clients. And I think it's the duty of those businesses who run those programs is to make sure that they don't disappoint those clients and that they,
yeah,
you know, however hard it could be, that they are providing, you know, a personal experience, that they are providing value,
yeah,
and that it's easy to use, yeah, because that's also another thing,
yeah,
that clients might not be encouraged to use loyalty if it's not that simple to use. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is that, you know, having simple things or that look simple to the client usually means there's a lot of effort that has to be put on the back end, on technology, on process,
yeah,
to make this experience simple. So, you know, I'm really passionate about helping clients, you know, get it right.
Yeah. To
me, loyalty, you know, that's the number one thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to have a loyalty program, to be honest with you? But yeah, maybe I'm a bit biased.
You're definitely biased, and so am I.
Yeah.
As is everybody listening. And I would say, you know, at the risk of being facetious, I think everybody does want a loyalty program. It's just whether they're willing to invest in it, you know, because, mm-hmm, you know, there's lots of different things, obviously, that a business can decide to focus their time and energy resources on. And loyalty is probably, you know, such a big decision for any of these. So I think we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But what I like about what you said, Jarek, is, you know, we would often just kind of say, you know, the purpose of a loyalty program is to drive profitable behavior change. And that for sure is the most logical and hopefully most profitable. But I do agree that from my perspective, the opportunity to have that connection with your customer, a direct digital connection, as most of them are now in the palm of their hand in terms of the mobile phone, to me, that's just totally a no-brainer. And especially, I think, coming out of, you know, whether it's a pandemic or, you know, the end of cookies, for example, with digital marketing becoming so much more expensive, you know, any brand I've spoken to has certainly said, you know, the cost of doing their digital is just multiplying. So I think you're absolutely right. The opportunity to actually build a relationship with people who have already self-identified in some way, whether it's a transaction or whether it's giving the data and actually, you know, enrolling, to go back to our point earlier. I absolutely think you're right. You know, that relationship building piece is something that just doesn't get enough attention.
Yeah. And it's not, fortunately, not the first thing that, the decision makers think about. But I think, you know, perhaps it should be, because if you do the relationship bit right, the other things come with it later, yeah. But if you focus on your numbers and, you know, not the relationship and having that client, you know, being happy with the program, you know, you will not get the number. So I'm really a supporter of looking at it as a you know, kind of a personal channel with your client, where you have the opportunity to build something more than just a transactional relationship.
Yeah. 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 And I think we've all joined up with programs or given our email address, you know, and then, you know, had an offer, you know, buy this, buy that and whatever. And I think we all pretty much do unsubscribe, you know, very quickly. And again, I think we see that in different markets. Sometimes I'm just like, whoa, you know, so the tolerance for the offers can be very different with different customers. But again, I think if there's this intention to say, thank you, Yarick, for joining up and here's a, you know, free cookie next time you're in the store, just to say thanks or whatever, you know, it just changes the dynamics. And then, you know, the offers and everything can come later. So definitely exactly. A different mindset. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So the final question I just wanted to touch on with you was, because you are a software guy, as you said. So, you know, I think this is the area that I have much less expertise. And as you know, we typically have kind of, you know, the marketing people, I suppose, on the show. But give us a sense, you know, where is the capabilities going? You've talked about the scale, and we know that, you know, obviously a company like you guys, you know, Comark, to me, I wouldn't even question that you can cope with the scale. To me, that's a given. But what other exciting things are coming in terms of functionality or the way that the software industry is going that that is useful for commercial people like me to kind of understand what our platforms should be able to do?
Yeah, sure. That's a good question. I think, I mean, from my perspective, and I mean, I'm not your typical, you know, technical guy. I am more on the business development side. But I would say my observations tell me is that loyalty is becoming more and more accessible to more and more businesses. You know, in the, let's call it old days, it used to be the big guys.
Yeah.
And it still will be, right? You will still get your big programs, the airline programs, the big coalition programs that will require, you know, a lot of capability and maybe sometimes individual approach to how their programs are set up from a technological perspective.
Sure.
But I think the biggest trends these days is that loyalty can be offered these days pretty much as a service, you know, as a cloud-based you know, offering that maybe won't be as flexible as some of the more sophisticated enterprise solutions for the big companies that who need it and who can afford it.
Yeah.
But will still offer these smaller businesses enough capability or maybe even more than they need to run a pretty good loyalty program, you know. So I think you will see this becoming just a more accessible kind of technology that smaller and smaller businesses will be able to use, you know, instead of their punch cards. You know, it will be almost as affordable to just basically do or use one of the cloud providers and you know, establish a loyalty program, not within, you know, months, or sometimes it could be closer to a year in some complex cases.
Totally.
But within weeks, yeah. So within weeks you could basically, you know, choose your vendor and, you know, be live with you know, a basic loyalty program in a matter of really weeks. I mean, that's doable these days. And I think that's the aspect of technology that you know, excites me, you know, the most. In terms of features, I think what I'm observing is that, you know, with the, you know, advent of, you know, cloud services and all these different tools that are out there, you will see those services being more and more interoperable. And that's, you know, that's one of the aspects that clients expect these days is that when they select a solution, a vendor, that this solution vendor already has, you know, connections to other popular platforms, you know, whether it is, you know, marketing automation or some kind of business intelligence tools. So this ecosystem will become more and more interoperable and will therefore enable smaller and smaller clients to gain benefits from an ecosystem, not just a siloed system, which you see quite a lot, but, you know, these things actually working with each other to provide a larger, you know, benefit.
Okay.
Because, you know, as much as I love loyalty and I think loyalty can do a lot, I know that there are other systems there that we have to integrate with, that we have to work with to make this experience, you know, truly, you know, simple and beneficial and whole. So I think these are the kind of future I see. Of course, you know, there will be, you know, I mean, things like availability of loyalty on mobile phones. I think that's something that we've already had for a while. So it's not a new thing, but it is going to become more and more sophisticated. It will become more and more personalized. Mm. So, you know, the whole industry, including us, is working on technology to be able to provide these things really in a much simpler and easier way for our clients.
Mm. Music to my ears, as I said, you know, with my commercial marketing hat on, I want it to be simple and easy and exciting and accessible. So, yeah, I do like that. I had a listener reach out recently from a jewelry store in the UK, and he did say, what about us? You know, what can we do with loyalty? Because we do talk to so many, I suppose, enterprise businesses on this show. So great to hear it is becoming so much more accessible, regardless of the size of the business. So, Jarek, that is all of the questions I had for you from my side. Was there any other points that you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
I mean, I think what I just wanted to say is thank you for doing these podcasts. They're really awesome. I have to admit that sometimes I learn more about some of our clients from you than from within my company, because, you know, being a global company, I don't have that opportunity to work with our clients, for example, in Latin, you know, America. So I actually enjoyed listening to the podcast you've done with Puntos
Livelo,
yes. the other amazing big coalition program, and I actually learned a lot myself from it.
Yeah,
because I don't get that opportunity to actually talk to this client. So I think you're doing a great job, and I really enjoyed being here. I hope there was some value in the discussion for some of your listeners. I'll look forward to arranging some of our other clients from Southeast Asia and ANZ
to be on your
podcast and share their experience.
Oh, super, super. Well, that's a wonderful way to finish up. So with that said, Jarek Vlodica, I hope I pronounced it correctly, Jarek.
Yes.
Managing Director. Oh, super. So yes, Managing Director for Comark in Australia. Thank you so much, Jarek, from Let's Talk Loyalty.
Thank you, Paula.
This show is sponsored by The Wise Marketeer, the world's most popular source of loyalty marketing news, insights, and research. The Wise Marketeer also offers loyalty marketing training through its Loyalty Academy, which has already certified over 245 executives in 27 countries as certified loyalty marketing professionals. For more information, check out thewisemarketeer.com and loyaltyacademy.org. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Loyalty. If you'd like us to send you the latest shows each week, simply sign up for the Let's Talk Loyalty newsletter on letstalkloyalty.com, and we'll send our best episodes straight to your inbox. And don't forget that you can follow Let's Talk Loyalty on any of your favorite podcast platforms. And of course, we'd love for you to share your feedback and reviews. Thanks again for supporting the show.